When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's mailbag time. Is anyone starting to doubt Jameis Winston? And what's with all the Tommy John surgeries for the Rays anyway? And what do the Bolts have to do if they're going to finally raise the Stanley Cup? We'll also talk about the president's decision to uninvite the Eagles to the White House. All that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud with the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Before we get started on this podcast, let me tell you about a special offer from Audible.com. Sign up now and you get a free 30-day trial. That's a $15 value, and a free audiobook. All you have to do is this. Go to audibletrial.com/sportsday. That's spelled A-U-D-I-B-L-E, trial.com/sportsday for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. Okay, Steve, well, the Rays lose 4-2 to the Washington Nationals, and Max Scherzer, this guy was lights out, man. The good thing about the game was it took, I think, all of 2 hours and 17 minutes.
216, officially.
Was it 216? Yes. Okay, well, what's a minute between friends? But he was incredible. I think at one point he threw 15 straight first-pitch strikes or something crazy like that.
Well, he threw 99 pitches in the game. 81 were strikes.
81 out of – think about that. I mean, if you want to teach somebody how to pitch, go watch Max Scherzer. Now, it helps that you have good stuff, but – the fact that he just doesn't let these guys up, just pounds the strike zone, and you got to go up there ready to hit, makes all the difference in the world to not just the infielders and everybody else, but that's the way you should attack hitters. Nathan Eovaldi wasn't as sharp for the Rays this time. Remember the last time out, he was very, very good, no hit for six innings. Gave up some runs early. It's five losses in a row now, Steve, for the Tampa Bay Rays. Boy, you don't want to go gamble with these guys at the Hard Rock. They're the guys that like are up like, you know, a couple $1,000 in the first few minutes and don't know when to get up. They win five. Remember, they were in Oakland. They won the first three in Oakland. That was five in a row. Now they've lost five in a row. I mean, it's a weird way to hang around 500 by instead of lose one, maybe win two, lose two, win three. Not these guys. They just give it all back.
Well, here's the thing, and you know, we remember the beginning of the season. They started 1-8 and 4-13, and part of the reason is they were playing Boston and New York a lot, who are two of the best teams in the league. Well, in June, they've got 27 games in June. 24 of them are against teams that are in the playoffs, if the playoffs started today. And they're now 0-4 to start that month. They lost 3 to Seattle, and then they've lost 1 to Washington.
Yeah, so the better baseball teams, they're not and this is true. The better the teams, the better the pitching. And, you know, whether it's Boston with David Price and Chris Sale, those are the teams that they're not swinging the bats. It's not as if they don't get hits. And they didn't have many hits tonight. I think it was 4 or 5. It actually made it interesting when Brad Miller came off the bench and had a 2-run double in the 8th inning. And they had the tying run at the plate.
And not only that, but they scored 2 runs and raised Max Scherzer's ERA to 1.95.
That's crazy, man. It's just crazy how good he's been, and for a long time, too. But this is maybe one of his best years ever.
Well, he's the back-to-back Cy Young Award winner in the National League, and he's having a better year this year than the last two.
He's going to wind up winning 3 in a row. The guy's a Hall of Fame pitcher. There's no question in my mind about it. But they do. They struggle against better pitching. But they'll get their hits. They'll get guys on. You know, like you'll see them get guys on. But they have to have a big hit, and that's what they've been lacking when they were winning all those games and they came back from that terrible start. They were getting guys on, but they're getting big, you know, big hits and some home runs too, and that's not coming as of late. So you know, this offense can look pretty feeble and certainly against the better pitching, and that was the case, you know, yesterday. But some more bad news. Chris Archer now is on the 10-day disabled list with a groin strain, I guess. They're hopeful to get him back, you know, when this 10-day stint is over, but that's going to put more pressure on the pitching staff. It looks like Matt Andrees might eat up a lot of those innings that Chris Archer. And that's the thing about Archer. No matter how you feel about him, he's a guy that's remained pretty healthy throughout his career, and you know, is always, you know, always available to you at least every five days, and has been pitching pretty well of late. But this is not going to help them in this stretch either. They had their one day off on Monday, I guess, and they're on a, it was a stretch of 40 days or something
like
that.
Yeah, they had that was the first off day in 13 days, I believe. And then I think they've played like 40 games in 41 days. They had a doubleheader in there.
Goodness.
Yeah, it's been a brutal stretch. And then this month they get the all the top teams in the American League and some of the National League with Washington in there too.
Yeah, so an afternoon game today, I guess, is their two-game series, interleague series, wraps up in Washington. So something afternoon baseball, which is always kind of fun. Yeah,
Johnny Venter is going to get the start.
Is he really? Wow.
Yes, he is, against Tanner Roark.
One of those bullpen days for him, I guess,
it will
right?
be. And Matt Andrees will get a bulk of the innings on Friday in place of Chris Archer, but they have not decided whether he will start or come in later.
Interesting. I wonder what he thinks. I bet he would like to start, but who knows? Maybe he's buying into all this stuff. But Johnny Venters has been great. So I'd like to see him, if they're going to do that, see him. And I'm sure it has a lot to do with the way the Nationals, you know, order sets up and that sort of thing.
And Diego Castillo, interested in seeing him. The Rays have said he's going to get into some high-leverage situations late in the game. They want to see what he can do with that. So he's one of those potential closers, if not this year, for the future. He's somebody they're grooming for that type of role.
I think we're very close to seeing some of those guys come up from Durham. You know, we're the first week in June. You get middle to late June. I think you'll probably see some of them, depending on what, you know, what all that particulars are with their contracts and things like that. But
some of it has to do with injuries at the major league level or trades or the Rays.
Sure.
You know, I think the Rays would like to trade some of these players instead of just cutting them and still having to pay them.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
To make room, like for Jake Bowers to come up, you assume that, you know, Brad Miller's probably going to be moved unless either he or CJ Cron get hurt.
Right.
You know, Adames, you probably don't call up until Echeverria is off the roster.
Do you know what to do with him?
But you know, you don't want to call Bowers or Adames up and have them sit on the bench. You want them to play.
They're going to play, and they're going to play every day. Yep. That's not the role you want them in, and that's sort of what they're waiting for, I think, for them.
So,
to have
I think they're waiting for the Super 2 date and everything else, but the other part of it is to make sure they're going to get enough playing time.
Yep, and I think it'll make a difference for them, and we'll see how they do. I mean, that's sort of what this year is about, and so Ray's got to pull themselves out of a funk to get a chance at Washington today. Okay, so let's hit the mailbag. There's some questions on really all the teams, so I'll let you get started.
We'll start with the Rays, and we had two questions kind of on the same topic. So Rooting for UF asking about the parade of pitchers going to see Dr. Andrews, wondering if it's a rut of bad luck or a systematic issue. John was more specific, says, Ron Porterfield left the Rays after 2017 to go work for the Dodgers. I believe the Rays only had one pitcher during his tenure require Tommy John surgery. Now we've got 3 and 7 months since his departure. Coincidence?
Probably. You know, I don't know. Ron Porterfield's one of the best trainers, I think, in baseball. And certainly, you know, that was an incredible run of luck. You could maybe say that it was almost too good, that their time was coming and this could be it. But, I mean, look, I think this is epidemic in baseball. I mean, the Rays have really, you know, really been inflicted with it this year with, you know, starting with Brent Honeywell and just, you know, all the guys that have gone down with the Tommy Johns and now – the latest one being Anthony Vonda. So it's unfortunate. I think baseball has a problem. And nowadays, you know, it seems to be like there's two kinds of pitchers, those who have had Tommy John and those who have not had it yet. And I think the reason for that goes to the fact that too many of these guys coming up through high schools, you know, play travel ball. They don't play multiple sports. A lot of them are just focused on one thing. It's overuse injuries, and the velocity is the thing. And I used to think that it was, well, these guys are snapping too many curveballs off when they're 12, and that could be the case. You know, that still happens, and I never understood why you want, you know, your 11 or 12-year-old to, you know, throw breaking balls when a fastball and a changeup will do it. But everybody is focused from the time you're in travel ball on with how hard can you throw. You know, I knew a coach that my son played for, and he used to tell his travel ball team, if you can throw 90 by the time you're 18, I'll get you a college scholarship. Well, so, you know, it was all about you know, how hard you can throw. And it's undeniable that in the majors these days, you've never seen such velocity. I mean, every team has a guy that comes out of the bullpen that throws, you know, upper 90s. I'm talking 97, 98, sometimes 100 miles an hour. I mean, it was rare if a player threw 100 miles an hour back in the day. So I just think the arm is not meant to do that, and I think there's been an enormous emphasis on velocity for these pitchers, and that's why, frankly, I think they're all ending up with Tommy John surgeries. It's unfortunate, especially if you come from a college program. A lot of these guys are throwing a million innings in college. So I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that there's something being done so drastically that it's putting these guys, you know, elbows in jeopardy, but I just think it's just their run of bad luck right now.
All right. Well, Les asks, with Archer's injury, does that hurt his trade value come July? He's been pretty durable, so the injury comes at a bad time. Also, if we get rid of him, can we still say we're built on starting pitching?
Yeah, you're always going to be built on starting pitching. I mean, just look at the draft. I mean, right, that's where they focused their early picks, and they always will, because they're not a team that can ever really, at this point, compete for starting pitching with the price tags that are out there. That's why, you know, the David Prices and the James Shields and those guys generally move on. As far as Archer goes, I don't know what his trade value will be. Certainly if he's not healthy, it's going to affect him, but he has been durable, as mentioned in the question, and this is not an arm thing. You know, that's the thing about Archer, is that when we talk about Tommy John and stuff like that, he's been remarkably injury-free from a shoulder arm standpoint. So from that, you know, I mean, a groin is something not as serious as some things would be. So he'll probably come back from that. I just don't know what his value will be. Like, is he a number three starter on a contending team? Is he a number four starter on a contending team? He's not a guy they're going to work out of the bullpen necessarily, even though I think he'd be very good in that role with the fastball and the slider. So, I mean, if there was a trade market for him that they were happy with, they would have already dealt him. It's not to say he won't be as they get down the stretch run. But it's a 10-day DL. It's not 60-day. So I think he'll be okay as far as the injury goes. I don't think that'll affect him.
Yeah, players get hurt. Teams know this. If you're healthy at the trade deadline or you're close to getting back to healthy, teams will still trade for you. They know what you can and can't do. They're not going to – because you spent a stint on the DL earlier in the season doesn't mean they're going to stay away from you.
No, I agree.
All right, Bobby asks, thoughts on the new Rays stadium design? Retractable or partially open-air umbrella roof?
Well, they have to have a roof. Let's just start there because, I mean, there's just no way you'd be playing doubleheaders all the time. And, you know, frankly, if you're a fan, you like to know that rain or shine, they're going to play. That's always been sort of a bonus with the Rays, if you're a fan of them.
As long as the 16th Street substation stays up.
True. That's true. They've had a little trouble with the power. There's nothing you can do about that, I suppose. There are ways to do a roof. And, again, the retractable thing, I don't know, is as important.
Look, I don't think it's going to be retractable.
Because you're going to use it five times a year, and it's the difference in expense is precipitous. It's huge, right?
You've been to U.S. Bank Stadium up in Minnesota.
That's the model. I was just going to say that. That's the model, because I don't know if you've been there, Steve.
I have not, but I've read lots about it.
It's phenomenal. I mean, you literally don't feel like you're out. You're inside. I mean, and that's saying something in Minnesota, because obviously, in the wintertime, you would know if you were outside because you'd be freezing your tail off. But there is so much natural sunlight that goes through that building that you have a sense that you're sort of enjoying the day, you know, whatever the day is, if it's a sunny day, whatever. And yet you're still protected. So my guess is I think every stadium that is going to consider a roof should do it. Like U.S. Bank, because it's a phenomenal, not a good, but a phenomenal place to watch a game, and you really don't get that claustrophobic, closed-in feeling at all.
All right, we're going to switch topics now to the Bucks, and Darren asks, don't you think it's inevitable that Winston gets a suspension? It seems to me if the NFL clears someone, it happens within a week or two. When they're going to suspend someone, they seem to wait to announce it during the dead period in June, early July.
I don't know if it's inevitable. I mean, I've been consistent with this. I do think he's going to get something. And I don't have anything to base it on, really. I mean, well, I can't say nothing. I mean, it's more than an educated guess, but nothing I can reveal at this time. I believe that, you know, again, the personal conduct policy is so broad that it's going to affect him in some ways. Now, the fact that it hasn't been adjudicated as such, I mean, this is sort of what the NFL does, right? I mean, whether it's Tom Brady, you know, whose initial ruling came down in August, a couple weeks before, I think, the regular season started, and he appealed it and actually played a whole season for Deflategate. And then, you know, last year with Ezekiel Elliott, I want to say it was probably May or June. So we're in about that time frame. Look, this is coming down sooner than later. And when I say that, I mean, we could get to July 4th when the whole league takes off, I suppose. I sense that it's going to happen before that. I think before the league takes its break, because there's only really 2 weeks where everybody is off in the NFL, I think we're going to have something. Now, I'll just say this. If it's a lot of games, that would surprise me. And I think you'd be looking at an appeal process because, I mean, I don't think Jameis or anybody feels like that anything like that is warranted. In fact, I know that Jameis doesn't feel like he should get anything because he feels completely innocent in these allegations and also has a witness in Ronald Darby that can confirm it and everything else. But, you know, if somebody was in danger, I mean, this is how these things work. Like, okay, so you had the Uber account, so you're responsible for who's in the car with you. You're an NFL player. You're representing a team. You're representing yourself. You're representing the Shield. You have another NFL player with you. Now, if somebody in that car does something that endangers somebody and they're part of your group and it's your car, your account, then somehow you could then by proxy be responsible for that. I could see how that would be an extension of the NFL player conduct policy. So that's what I mean. Like, but you know, whether or not he did this or he did that, as alleged, I don't know that that's going to be as easy to ascertain. So we'll have to wait and see. But I know they're hopeful he gets zero games. My hunch has been that I think that he's probably going to get something. Just because, I mean, again, the liability of this whole thing is like, you know, you want to be fair, but there's really no due process because in this case, there was no criminal complaint. There's been no civil suit, although that could come later. So there's no opportunity to really, you know, depose your accuser in essence. I mean, so it's a little different than Ezekiel Elliott and some of those others. But we should know probably. I think we'll know before July 4th. That's just my hunch.
All right, Gator Dave asks, really rooting for Jameis, but does anyone else have doubt creeping in?
Oh, yeah. I think people do. And when I say people, I don't know who they are. People on my Twitter feed, perhaps. You have to doubt a quarterback. I don't think anyone in one buck does. Let me just get that clear. I think there are a ton of people whose very livelihoods depend on them being right about Jameis. And I think that they've been in football long enough to see signs that he is going to be that guy, okay? Has he been that yet? No. Have there been some factors last year that prevented it, like the arm injury? Yes. You know, does he still turn the ball over way too much? And last year it wasn't as much the interceptions but the fumbles? Absolutely. And here's the big thing is that no matter how you want to slice it up, right, he was the number one overall pick in the draft. That's an awful lot of expectation, okay? He wasn't a guy they took in the first round. He was the number one overall pick in the draft, a guy who won a Heisman Trophy, a national championship, and was a Pepsi Rookie of the Year and threw for 4,000 yards. So he got off to a pretty big start, even though they won six games as a rookie. And now the thing is that he's 3 years into it, and – even though it's one position and one player, we know it's a quarterback league. He's won 18 games in 3 years. the 3 years previous to him coming here, they won 16. So he's two games better than when they took him number one overall. And he's going into his fourth year, which means that after this season, there's only the fifth-year option that the Bucks, you know, have picked up, but it's guaranteed only against injury. I think regardless, he's back for a fifth year, even if Dirk Cutter and Jason Light aren't. I think they'll try to save him, bring somebody in to see if they can't make him catch fire and be the quarterback they want him to be. But is there doubts? Sure there's doubts. I mean, professional sports is hard, and look at the division he's in. You know, Drew Brees is not going to back down in his last couple years in the league. Matt Ryan has been to a Super Bowl. Brees won one. Cam Newton has been to a Super Bowl. The Panthers are getting better. All those teams are trying to get better. This will not be an easy thing for Jameis Winston to pull off. So, yeah, I definitely think there's doubts with any team that doesn't make the playoffs. There's going to be, you know, 12 teams that are happy with their quarterback, and everybody else has an eyebrow raised, I guarantee it, every single year.
All right, Ellis now asks, with all the interceptions we've heard about at OTA, should Bucks fans be worried about the offense or hyped about the defense?
Yeah. Well, Dirk is worried about the offense. Mike Smith is hyped about the defense. So somewhere in there is the mama bear. I think from what I see is it's not good on the offensive side. I mean, Jameis is throwing way too many interceptions, and, you know, so have the other guys, I guess, although I've seen more from Jameis than some of the others. But look, they've got some players that are more aggressive on the outside. That's undeniable. I mean, you know, when you get a chance to see Carlton Davis, you're going to love him. And, you know, is he going to get beat because he's a rookie? Yep, he is. They're going to double move him. They're going to run hitch and goes. They're going to do all kinds of things because he's naturally aggressive. But he can play man. He's long. I think he can play zone. That's still a work in progress. And he's going to play a lot of football regardless, because even when Vernon Hargraves is a starter at right cornerback, when the other team goes to three wide and then they go to the sub package, Vernon's moving inside and Carlton's playing corner. So he's aggressive. MJ Stewart is another guy that's very aggressive. You know, it's a good young group to go with Brent Grimes and some others. And so far, they've been quick studies. They've sort of, every guy to a man, when I talked to Hargraves last week and we played that interview, they all raved about just how quickly this rookie class has picked up the defense, you know. Because when you come in here, you know, your head's swimming. They throw install at you, and it's, you know, it's not like you're preparing for a game where you might have, you know, I don't know, 20 coverages you got to worry about. It's the entire playbook, okay? So this is the part where there's the most teaching going on, and they...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They've done a nice job. They really have. They've done a nice job of trying to get the ball away and getting up on receivers and being competitive for the football. We haven't seen that really the last couple of years, except for maybe Grimes. So I like the group. I do think that Cutter's about ready to see less interceptions right about now. But I had a quarterback a long time ago, Brad Johnson. I asked him one time, I said, do you worry about throwing interceptions like in training camp or, you know, the preseason or you know, OTAs, that kind of thing? He goes, no. He says, listen, he goes, if I'm not going to figure out what I can and can't throw in the off-season workouts and in training camp and that sort of thing, then how am I going to know what to do in the regular season? He says, training camp and the off-season is when you do try to take shots and you do try to figure out, okay, against this coverage and this leverage, can I squeeze this in here? Can I do this? It never upset him. Now, I think if you have a quarterback like Winston whose history is turning the ball over, you probably would rather see it not go into the other guy's hands. I can remember watching the Patriots, for example, and this comes with age, right? But watching the Patriots practice, I didn't see the ball picked off ever when Tom Brady was throwing it. In fact, it rarely hit the ground. So you know, that's obviously what you're hoping for, but they're not there yet. But right now I think the new guys are showing up, and that's probably why you're seeing more picks.
Okay, Bobby asked, should the Bucks trade Deshaun sooner than later?
Well, if they're going to do it, it's going to have to be sooner, because later would be too late. I guess later could be in October when they reach the trade deadline. But, you know, in reality, you know, even though he signed a 3-year deal, $20 million is guaranteed in the first 2 years. So make no mistake, I think this is Deshaun Jackson's last year with the Bucks. Now, anything can happen, but with the emergence of Chris Godwin, who is a starting caliber wide receiver and will probably start for them, if not be in the game really quickly. And you know, more and more when we go out to practice, we see Deshaun Jackson in the slot when they go three wide receivers and Godwin is a starter. So, you know, Deshaun's one of those guys that's not going to run 65 plays a game. Look, this is a big year for him, and it did not go well. Not all of it was on him, for sure. He's been here a lot more. In fact, I don't know that he's missed any OTAs. I mean, the ones that have been open to the public that we've seen, at least, he's been here every week, which is not what he's done in the past. He does have his routine to go out to California and train, you know, with a track coach that he's done for years, because his speed is his biggest asset. But I suppose, you know, that there could come a point during the year if Godwin were that guy, and you know, they got Humphreys and you know, Watson, the new kid. I mean, they got a lot of guys. So it's possible that they could move him if some team gave them something. But I think they're committed to him for this year. And I think they're anxious to see if they can't make it work. And so for that reason, I think it would, if they're going to trade him, it'd have to be sooner. But I don't think he's going to be traded.
All right, we'll go back in Bucks history now. As Jim asked, during the Dungy era, did you ever hear any players say that they felt cheated out of more possible playoffs, championships, etc., because Dungy was too loyal and stuck with Dilfer and offensive coordinators too long?
Well, he stuck with Mike Shula, and he wrote in his book, Quiet Strength, that the biggest mistake he made was allowing Mike Shula to leave. I don't know if that's true, but I remember that, you know, the guy got fired at the Pro Bowl, and it was a mess because Dungy almost quit over it, and I'm not exaggerating. It almost happened. And then after that, he had a lot of coordinators. You know, he didn't stick with anybody. I mean, he went from, you know, Les Steckel to Clyde Christensen and, you know, and that sort of thing. And so it didn't work out. As far as Dilfer goes, I think Tony was a stay-the-course guy. I mean, he recognized that they drafted Trent Dilfer in the first round. And, you know, look, Trent made the Pro Bowl in 97. They started winning. They started getting the playoffs consistently. But if you talk to those defensive players, it drove them nuts that he threw so many interceptions. And you know, they lost games. I remember them losing a game. Oh, gosh, what was it? I don't think they allowed a first down against the Giants until like the third quarter, and they lost because Trent threw a bunch of picks. So there was a lot of frustration with Trent, and Trent got better obviously as he played, and then, you know, ultimately won a Super Bowl with the Ravens after he left here. But yeah, there was frustration. The thing is, they didn't really have anyone to turn to. It wasn't like you know, you did have Sean King, who they eventually drafted, and then that's exactly what happened, right? Sean King came in. Trent Dilfer broke his collarbone. King comes in 1999 and plays the last five games. I want to say they won maybe four of them, and then ended up taking them all the way to the NFC Championship game when they lost to the Rams on the whole Bert Emanuel thing. So, you know, they did move away from Trent, but it wasn't until Trent's last 2 years that Sean King even showed up.
We'll switch gears to the Lightning now, as Cody tweeted us. Now that the Lightning haven't made it to the big game, do you think they're thinking of trading Stammer?
No. I don't think so. Even though Stamkos, I'm pretty sure Washington's going to win this Stanley Cup this year. It just seems like it's their year, and that means that Alexander Ovechkin, you know, the captain, wins a Stanley Cup, so he gets that monkey off his back. I think that makes Stamkos now the best player to have not won a Stanley Cup, and that's a lot of pressure in and of itself, but He's got 5, maybe 6 years, Steve. You probably know better than me on his contract. I just don't see them moving on from Stanford.
He's probably got 6 years, 6 to 7 years left on the contract.
Yeah.
I believe he's got a no-move clause, so I don't think they can trade him, to be honest.
They can't trade him. And, look, he's got to be better 5-on-5. I mean, you know, all but, what, 12 of his goals were only 12 of his goals were full strength last year. So he's got to be better in that area. But, no.
You're hoping that the knee will feel better next year.
Yeah,
you know,
I think he played well this year, but surgery. Yeah.
Next year he should be a lot better with that knee. You'd like to see him get back to a more potent offensive threat, non-power play.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's relying a little too much. I mean, that seems to be where all his goals come from. If he can skate better and feel better, we don't know. I mean, that's the thing. You're right. Any kind of knee surgery, especially something like that with a total, I think he had a total meniscus replacement or something like that.
Yeah.
Other players that have gone through it
said it took a full year after coming back for them to feel whatever normal is. As Stamkos has said, you know, with everything he's gone through and some of the strange injury he's gone through that, you know, he has no idea what normal is anymore, but
I know. Well, I had, this is not to compare myself ever to Steven Stamkos, but like just, I had a meniscus tear one time. And I can tell you, because I ran a lot at the time, and I couldn't run, obviously, for a while. But I can tell you that you feel different 3 months out, then 6 months out, then 9 months out, and a year after surgery is a big deal. It's, you end up forgetting about it, at least the one that I had. And so you are not, even though you're doing stuff on it that you used to do, it's not the same. It just isn't. But it gets stronger and... you know, you do come back. And so I think you're right, Steve. I think we'll see if he can stay healthy in other areas, I think we'll see a different Steven Stamkos next year.
And I'd still like to see him separated from Kucherov so that they both look to shoot.
I know you would.
I've been saying that since the beginning of the calendar year.
Look, Kuch has to get better, man. As somebody was asking me, I heard, I think this was on the radio today, somebody was like, well, do you think Ovechkin will inspire Kucherov? Well, that's already what he aspires. I mean, you know, that's the greatest Russian hockey player maybe of all time, right, is Alexander Ovechkin. So, but he's a different type of player. He'll never be the physical presence that Ovechkin is or necessarily have the grit, but he's got to come up with a bigger determination. I just go back to game six. That was such a bad game for him, and the body language was so bad. The head dropped, and... You know,
he seems to get lost in the game sometimes when,
he does.
When they're spending a lot of time in the defensive end and not the offensive end. He seems to get down on himself, isn't the right analysis, but lose a little interest or, you know, he's just not paying attention to all the little details.
Right, right. And we know he's not a good defensive player, so that, you know, that he's not going to give you much there. So there's a lot of layers he can add to his game, but. The Lightning are going to get there. Look, they're going to get there as long as Yzerman keeps, you know, keep this core together and keeps bringing guys up. The development they have as an organization is phenomenal. Look at all the young guys that come up and contribute right away, whether, you know, Sergachev or Braden Point. They got more of those guys down
there.
Next
year they're going to have a guy named Alexander Volkov come up who played 1 year in the AHL last year. He's a Russian-born player as a center. Cal Foot may be up the defensive defenseman they drafted first round last year. Mitchell Stevens is going to come up. He's a lot like Tony Cirelli. Eric Chernak may be up, who they got in the Ben Bishop trade from the Kings. He's a defenseman. I mean, they're going to have a lot of young guys come up next year. So it's going to be interesting what Yzerman does with the roster to make room for those guys. Because I think he wants to get them a lot of playing time.
The goaltender only has his first full season of starting. Think about that. This was his first full season as the starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the best player on the ice.
And he's a Vezina Trophy finalist. For best goalie in hockey.
I mean, he will get better, folks. I mean, that's scary, but he will.
All right, and our final question for tonight's mailbag comes from Brian, who says, I believe Tom Jones said that he would like to be on the show more on yesterday's podcast. Can we make it a weekly scheduled appearance?
Done. Yeah. What day would you like him on? I'll be happy to make sure that he does it.
I believe Tom's response on Twitter was, maybe?
I think we can get him. I mean... The one thing about Tom, who, you know, was going to be part of the biggest part of Sports Day Tampa Bay until he wasn't, was that he said, hey, guys, anytime you need me. And that's becoming more frequent. So
you're saying you want to make him regret that?
I do. We should call him like every day and then like shame him into doing it 3 days a week. But for right now, yeah, I don't know if you'll commit to a certain day or a specific day, but I think you need your Tom Jones at least once a week, and that's going to be my goal. Then we'll see where we go from there.
And then Ellis responded, would he do that from Boston?
good shot there. I like that.
That is a great tweet.
It's an old reference, but a good one. Yeah. Yeah, because he was all over the Bruins, man. Yeah, the Lightning met their match, boy. Got to hand it to these guys. They got no shot now. Nobody saw Washington coming. I guess Boston doesn't feel as bad either. That's the thing. If the Caps win this thing, and it looks like for all the world they will, I still think it goes six games because I think Las Vegas is going to get one. But if they win this thing, I mean, think about it. Who knows how the Lightning in the Vegas series would have gone? But, you know, you took this team to seven games, and you had actually, I mean, you needed one game out of the last two before you decided not to score for two games. But that's how close. I mean, professional sports, man, I'm telling you.
Well, and 2 years ago, they took Pittsburgh to seven in the Eastern Conference Finals when they won the cup over San Jose.
And they won the cup. So, yeah, it's matchups. It's like, you know, who's hot at the time. You know, certain teams don't match up. I still say that the Bucks had a carpet ride through the playoffs the year they won the Super Bowl. They could not have drawn it up any better. San Francisco winds up coming back, I think, miraculously and beating the Giants. I'm telling you, the Giants would have been a horrible matchup for the Bucks. They were a big, heavy team that ran downhill, and all the things that the Bucks do with their speed on defense would have been negated by power. And instead, they got Steve Mariucci and a West Coast offense that they saw every single day in practice. And so, you know, obviously they had something for Philadelphia, but it's, and then, you know, they get to the Super Bowl and there's the Oakland Raiders. I tell you what, man, I knew every one of Rich Gannon's audibles. You know what I mean? I played Rich Gannon in practice. So, you know, that was meant to be. And this year, you know, the Lightning ran into a team. I just don't think they matched up really well with them, even though they needed one game out of the last two to go to the Stanley Cup. So, speaking of Tom, and we just were, I'm not sure where he'd fall on this. You may or may not agree with me. You could be on the other side of this too, Steve. But I'll just say that, like, this, the biggest story that has been wearing everybody out, I think, over the last 24, 48 hours, whatever it is this whole, you know, President Trump, I guess, uninviting the Eagles to the White House. And, you know, there's a lot of, depending on who you believe, the Eagles put down, you know, they're bringing 80 people and then requested a day. They knew that the president was going to be at a summit and then wound up saying, you know, 10 or less were actually going to show up. And so obviously the optics of that were not going to work for the president, and he canceled it. But in doing so, I think the first tweet was he made reference to, you know, the Eagles in particular, but not standing for the national anthem. And in fact, no Eagle player failed to stand for the national anthem. And then you had Fox News, you know, had a picture that, you know, was Zach Ertz and another guy. They were actually kneeling, but they were kneeling in prayer. They apologized for that. This whole thing has just been this back and forth kind of, I think everybody's tired of it a little bit. But by the same token, it's like, I'm, you know, And you can look at it both ways. You can say, well, you know, why is the president politicizing this? But, you know, his counter is with that the Eagles politicized it by not coming to the White House. I got a solution for this. Stop inviting teams to the White House. It's stupid. It used to be a great honor, and I'm this is from somebody who's a history buff, and I, unbelievably, I'll get into the story one day, but, you know, a guy from Robinson Drive in St. Petersburg found his way through the Bucks, no less, not for the White House visit, because them and the Lightning, for whatever reason, Tampa Bay's world champions, did not get to go to the White House, either team. There was the Gulf War, or there was some conflict going on, and neither team actually...
The Lightning had a lockout.
Lightning had a blackout, so yeah, they couldn't go. But in any case, I found myself, they were playing a preseason game up there, long story short, I found myself with a small contingent of people that got sort of a guided tour with the guy that was the head of Secret Service for the White House, and he took us to the West Wing, and I have stood in the Oval Office. It was unbelievable. Clinton was president then, stood behind the desk, had, I still have chills when I think about it. I could not believe where I was. It's an experience few people ever have a chance. And look, these guys usually end up in the Rose Garden when they visit the White House, right? I don't know that they all end up in the Oval Office, but the point is, it's a great, great honor to go, and it's just the history. It's the people's house. It's not. It doesn't matter who's in office. I mean, it's awe-inspiring just to be there. And I think, you know, I think it's cool if you get invited. You know, it's a great opportunity. But in the way things are going now with the divisiveness, and, you know, go back to last year when you know, the SOB comment, and it got to be out of hand. And now the owners have this new policy where, well, they're not going to come out if you don't want to, you know, no one, everyone has to stand, but if you don't, you should stay in the locker room. This thing has, Steve, I'm telling you, we're not going to get out from under this, because politically, you know, 90% or 80-something percent people, it's an easy win. It's like, yeah, you should stand for the national anthem. Who doesn't believe that, right? But it's never been about the anthem, and everybody's talking at each other instead of to each other. And I wish that my solution is, you know what? Stop inviting people to the White House. Just stop it.
Well, the Cavs and Warriors have already said neither team will accept an invite if they get one.
Right. So, okay. So don't ask and don't go. You know what I mean? Like, it's, look, I mean, Tom Brady didn't go. You know, the Patriots went, and Bob Kraft went, and the whole team, you know, a large contingent of the team. Tom Brady wasn't there.
And he's friends with Donald.
And he supposedly plays golf with the guy. So he didn't like the optics, or he had something better to do with Giselle. So, you know, where's all the outrage on Tom Brady refusing an invitation? He's the greatest player who ever lived, right? He's the GOAT. I don't know. It's just like we have different rules for different people and different teams, and it's, you know, you're not supposed to say no, or if you say no, you're trying. I think people are tired of it, and I won't get into the political thing because I don't think – I think peaceful protest is a big part of this country, and where you choose to do it, look, they have a platform. They're going to use it. That's what protest is supposed to make you uncomfortable and all those things. But this was not a big deal. I remember there were five players, I think, in the league that were taking a knee back in the day. And then it became, you know, the SOB comment, and then the owners joined hands. And now this thing is never going away because the NFL botched it when they got in the meetings. And it's not going to work for anybody. And I'm afraid we're going to be writing a bunch of national anthem stories. And I wish either side would just, I can see both, but I'm just tired of it. And I think with respect to the White House visits, just stop. Just don't invite anybody. Let's just stop, okay? Anyone can go to the White House anytime they want. You'll get a tour of the East Wing, put your name on a list, you'll get in there eventually, and, you know, maybe you'll see some cool stuff. But as far as these visits go, I mean, plus, you know, almost everybody goes now. I mean, it's like, and I'm not saying one team is better than the other, but when you consider all the NCAA teams, whether it's, you know, women's champions or men's champions, and, you know, then you have your pro teams, and every league has a team. I mean, it just seems like you could be doing these, you know, Rose Garden photo ops every week if you wanted to.
The presidents are usually looking for photo ops.
Absolutely. And this was not going to be the crowd that he wanted, and yeah, certainly considered an insult if 10 or less people were going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so why do it? But, you know, he's got to take ownership of that too, because, you know, if that many people feel that, you know, that the politics are not right and they don't feel comfortable going or whatever, you got to own that. Maybe try to spend time sitting down and figuring out why there's such a great divide and bring people together. I mean, that might be one way of handling it, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, that's my rant for the day. I'm not going to go all too political. I know people are tired of it. And I think this thing went sideways right away. So, you know what? The Bucks and the Lightning survived it. They didn't get to go to the White House for totally different reasons. And I'm still bitter about it a little bit, but that's a personal thing because I would have loved to have covered them up there. But you know what? They still have the banners. They're still world champions, and you don't have to go. And maybe they stop inviting people. They won't. I don't know what's next. I mean, we're not going to go out for the anthem. You know, until 2009, by the way, in the NFL, teams weren't out in the field before the anthem. I mean, so, you know, it hasn't been that long that they've even been out there in the first place. It's never been about the anthem. It's not about the flag. And then, you know, of course, politically, everybody thinks it is, and I get it. But anyway, that's my rant. I'm not going to go any deeper than that right now. It's just I understand how people are weary of this whole thing. So thanks again for your mailbag questions. It was it's always a lot of fun. We try to do this once a week. And, you know, there's always opportunity to talk about all kinds of things with the Bucks, the Rays, the Lightning, certainly any of the college teams. We talked a lot of USF with Tom Jones yesterday. So if you didn't have a chance to hear that podcast, you want to go back and listen to it, you certainly can. You can always reach us. We love the interaction on Twitter at Sportsday TV. You can reach me at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. As always, rate and review this podcast if you get an opportunity. That really helps us out. And Steve, where can they get this podcast?
You can get this anywhere you get podcasts. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, SoundCloud. You can subscribe so you get the podcast every day downloaded to your mobile device. Or you can go to tampabay.com/sports. The latest episodes are there too.
Appreciate you guys listening. As always, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times for Steve Versnick. Have a great day, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.